Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Confident Coach Club, where we help new and aspiring coaches start and grow their business. We talk about finding your niche, packaging your services, creating content that your audience loves, and finding your first couple of clients. It's kind of like the business school for coaches. I'm your host, Liz Huber. Welcome to the show and enjoy today's episode. Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Confident Coach Club podcast. I'm your host, Liz Huber, and today I have Greg Thaxton on the show with me. Greg helps coaches fill their client roster so that they can increase their income each and every month. His mission is to provide honest sales and marketing training in our industry, where it seems like you have to choose between making money and keeping your integrity as a coach. He started coaching when he was only 22 years old, but it's amazing. And by age 24, he had already done over six figures in annual sales. So now he helps other coaches get clear on their niche, generate more leads, and easily enroll their ideal clients. I'm super excited to have him on the show today, not only to talk about his amazing journey as a coach and obviously his expert advice on how to grow your coaching business, but also because I've been reading a few of his his emails lately, and he has very strong opinions about our current pandemic and what that means for you as a coach. So I'm very excited to dive deeper into all of this today. Welcome to the show, Greg.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. So it's around 11 a.m. for you right now, and I'd love to start off the conversation by talking a little bit about how you spend your morning so far. What are your non-negotiables in your routine that really keep you on top of your game?
It's a good question, and today's actually a good day to talk about it because it's an example of me just not doing my morning ritual at all. Which was intentional, but let me take you through what a typical day looks like and then why I would do something different today. So what a typical day looks like is we wake up at six. I live with my wife and I and my dog, and wake up, I make coffee for them, and then I meditate and then eat breakfast. And then I'll typically read, you know, or study some business or personal development book. And that's usually based on like whatever quarterly goals that I have. So all of that went well today. And then for me today, I just dove into creating a training for my coaching group that I want to get out today. And I just needed some focused time. On another day, what I would typically do is do some journaling, work out, then get into I call it an MIT, or most important thing for the day. So something that I've teed up the night before of, okay, this is the thing that uses my strengths. It's going to move the business forward, even if I don't get anything else done today. So I dove right into the MIT. I've been finding it challenging to work from home. And obviously, like, you know, I've been running this business for over 6 years, and a lot of that has been working from home. But recently I'd been part of a co-working space in a shared office, and I'd been going there in the mornings. And I find that to be a nice separation for focused work, for not calls, which I usually do in the afternoon. So I found it challenging being cooped up, you know, and not having the change of pace. And so I've been noticing that I actually have to shift around and be a little bit more spontaneous than I usually am. I'm very regimented usually with my morning ritual, because as soon as it feels stale, which could only take a week or two, like, I almost found it very difficult to actually jump into work just because of everything that's going on. So that's what it looked like today. I've just been, for the last 3 hours, basically I've been just creating a training for one of my coaching groups.
Amazing. That sounds really exciting. Tell me a little bit more about, what it is that you do. We'll go back to how you started coaching in a minute, but like, what are you focusing on right now? How are you serving your audience?
Sure. So what I love to do is create step-by-step strategies and trainings for people. And so that's a big focus right now. We're building out one of my newer group programs to help coaches get to 10K a month. I, like you, I have a course for people who are starting off, and I work with a select handful of coaches who are already at around 10K a month and they're scaling to 20K a month in revenue. But really my main focus right now is building out that program to help people who've worked with some clients, have traction, have some case studies of clients they've really helped, and they want to make it into a sustainable business that they can then build on.
And so, like, how did you first get started? Because I know, you know, you didn't start off as a coach, so to speak. What was your first coaching business? I know you started at 22. So how did that look like? How did you get into it? And what was that first business?
Yeah, so I can kind of share a story with you to explain it, which was that after I graduated from college, I graduated like a semester early and just got everything done quick, and then went to Washington, D.C. to live with my now wife. We'd been long distance all through college. So I wanted to like get out, be with her as soon as possible. And I got a job in Washington, D.C. with a marketing consulting firm. And so they did like the market research where you'd be behind the glass, like the one-sided glass where you were watching a focus group, people talking about different products and things. And you could see them, but they couldn't see you. So it's kind of an interesting experience. And I did learn a lot about how to develop products and services that people actually want, you know, by listening to customers. But at the end of the day, I noticed that it didn't matter to me so much if, you know, a big credit card company did their marketing a little bit better. Often what happens with market research is you spend all this time creating suggestions and you hand the slide deck over to the company and they don't really usually do anything with it. So the work didn't feel meaningful to me, and I didn't really feel like I had control over that and autonomy over the work that I was doing. And so I think that most people at that stage would say, well, yeah, you don't have a lot of autonomy because you're young, you're starting off your career, so sort of work through the ranks. But as I looked at my bosses and the people who are higher up, great people, but I didn't want the life that they had. So you have to kind of question, okay, if this is my trajectory and I don't like what success looks like at the end of the trajectory, I need to shift something. So I went through a process of thinking about what I'd always been passionate about. And a lot of coaches listening to this will relate to the idea that you probably are always been passionate about personal development, about growing yourself. And I just very slowly on the side started building, like, you know, doing a live workshop where I was teaching some things about positive psychology and productivity and things like that. I got my first couple of clients. I had this one day where I was sitting in my office and I was just moving a number from one Excel spreadsheet to another Excel spreadsheet for work. And I realized, like, you know, I don't want to have to wait that 10 years to make an impact that I didn't really even want to make in the first place. And so that's when I got more serious about building my business. And within, I think it was 1 to 2 months, I had replaced my income from that job. And for me, it really came from investing for myself in high-end coaching. And that to me brought me into integrity, because it was like a little bit hard to charge people high prices when I wasn't really investing in that for myself. So when I started off, it was really helping people find work that was meaningful to them, because that's the journey I had just been through. So it was a sub niche of career coaching. And then I realized that within that, I really loved helping people who were starting businesses and growing businesses. So I started focusing more on entrepreneurs and business coaching. As that grew in the first couple of years, you know, I just had more and more coaches coming to me asking, like, how are you getting clients when you're so young? How are you being taken seriously? And the reality is that first I wasn't taken seriously. It was like a marketing 101 extreme course where it was like, you need to learn marketing or you're going to get laughed out of the room. And I started to learn more about how do I speak the language of my potential clients. And I really learned, like, no one gives a shit about you if you're able to articulate what they're going through, and if you're actually just able to solve their problems in advance for free, you're going to get credibility. So as I started getting case studies and started to become better with my content, like I said, I almost just by accident started taking on a couple of one-on-one clients who are coaches, trying to teach them what I had been learning. And it just grew from there to where at one point I was like, these people are getting amazing results. I love it. And it's time to double down on helping coaches fill their client roster.
Awesome. Thanks so much for sharing your story. Super interesting. And I really like what you said about investing in yourself. It's actually, I have a very, in my own journey, a similar experience where in the first year where I started my coaching business, I was really resistant to investing in coaching myself. I kind of knew I needed to do it, but told myself, you know, I don't have the money for it right now. I'm going to invest once I have the money. But it was obviously not true. And then after a year of struggling and kind of trying to do things myself with all free resources and stuff, that's when I had even less money, but that's when I actually invested in a coach. And then within 2 months, it was actually, you know, I had my first 6K month. So it's really good that you mentioned that with investing in yourself as a coach, how important that is. What would you say are some of the other key factors that made you successful, especially so fast and so young?
So I have 5 laws of high ticket coaching, and not everyone listening to this will maybe see yourself as a high ticket coach. At a certain point, you'll want to be the premium option if you're going to really make this into a business. So if you're at a point where you're like, you know, I just would love to make any money as a coach and just start getting some clients, that's okay. Everyone starts somewhere, but I'd also say raise your level of expectations a little bit and just do it right from the beginning. So these are my 5 laws, my 5 rules. And whenever I break one of these rules, stuff starts to not go well. So the first one is live the result. Live the result. And that's what we've been talking about, is congruence. Congruence is so important as a coach. And one form of congruence is obviously, if you're asking people to invest in growing themselves, you should be doing that too. And if right now your challenge is growing a coaching business, that's probably what you should be investing in. If you're always looking for the cheapest option, you're trying to do it yourself, that will be reflected back in some way, shape, or form through your potential clients, people who you're speaking to. So number one is live the result. But that's not just in terms of your investing. Obviously, that's, you know, if I help people lose weight and I'm 30 pounds overweight, like, that's not to hate on people of all different sizes and body types. But if you're a weight loss coach, like, I'm not going to hire you if you don't look like how I want to look like. And you can argue with that. You can say, well, that's really shouldn't be how it is, as long as you can help me get results. But like, as Jim Rohn would say, I wouldn't take that class. Like, I wouldn't start studying, thinking why it's important for you to walk the talk as a coach. There's lots of careers you can get into if you don't want to be the example. You know, you could go be a plumber, you can work at Starbucks, or you can be a lawyer. There's lots of things where you don't have to actually live the result that your ideal clients want. Coaching is one of those things where people want to hire you because they see that you have what they want. And I think the sooner that you get that, it makes it much easier, frankly, to choose a niche. It makes it easier to know what are the disciplines I have to do each day to be congruent with what my potential clients want. So I'm not teaching something, but then I'm not really doing it myself. That's the biggest thing you can do from a marketing perspective and from a coaching perspective to help your clients invest in you and rise up to that level that they want to be at. Okay. So that's number one is live the result. Congruence is everything. And feel free to stop me, because now I'm just probably going to like run through these.
No, if you think I love that would be helpful. Please go ahead. It's like a free training here for our audience. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
So ahead.
One example of a client I worked with recently is she helps moms build their businesses, and usually they're service-based businesses. They could be designers or consultants, whatever it is. And one of the things she preaches is work-life balance. So obviously these moms want to spend quality time with their kids. And when she came to me recently, she had been working late. She had been working till like 8 p.m. And it was frustrating to her, but she also realized, like, well, that's really not what I want my clients to be doing. And that little integrity gap, that incongruence, once we fixed that, made everything a lot easier, made her marketing more effective. She noticed her clients getting better results. So that's one example of what it means to live the result. That's law number one. Law number two of high ticket coaching is to sell surgery, not prevention. Sell surgery, not prevention. This is another one of those things where you can either spend your time wondering why it has to be this way and arguing about why, well, prevention's so much better because, you know, if we can prevent someone from having a heart attack with healthy diet, they will never have to have the surgery. Or you can just accept that people invest higher prices in things that are urgent, what are called bleeding neck issues, right? And even for those of us who are very growth minded, who love personal development, when we really think about the big changes we made in our life, usually it comes because it was too painful not to. Like, usually we're not actually that proactive as human beings, okay? And so we want to position our service as something that is more like surgery than it is prevention, right? And I'll give you an example, and again, with the weight loss niche, because I actually have another business that where we do fitness coaching, is if there's someone who, young professional, in pretty decent shape, but knows they're not being as consistent as they could be with getting to the gym, and they want to build that consistency, that's great. Like, that's a really important habit to have, but that's not someone who's going to pay me five, six, 10K for a coaching package. On the other hand, take someone who's a consultant, always on the road, really career oriented, and they keep losing weight and going back up. They have an emotional relationship with food, and they just had their, this is actually a real client I worked with. They just had their brother's wedding, were the heaviest they've ever been. And they have their sister's wedding in 3 months, and they want to actually fit into the tux and then not have these issues for the rest of their life. Like, they hate how they look naked. They're feeling the pain. That is someone who's much more likely to invest in a high ticket coaching offer. Okay. So that's selling surgery, not prevention. And as you think about not just your niche, like, do I want to help people in career or health or relationships? Think within that, what is an offer? What could I offer them that's surgery, not prevention? Okay. At this point, I'm going to stop because there may be people asking, well, what if I don't need to be a high ticket coach? Like, what if I charge less? And here's what I would recommend. Obviously, like, if you can't provide value that's commensurate with a higher price, then you're going to be charging less. There's two reasons why we want to aspire to be high ticket coaches. And one of them is just, it's much easier to make the business work that way. Like, sometimes I'll have people come to me and they'll be like, yeah, I feel like I have time for like 30 sessions a week. So if I got paid $100 a session, I'd be like making some really good money. It's like, you're going to burn out that way. And you're not going to be able to generate that number of leads to just help people one off and at a low ticket price. So sometimes you feel like, well, if I charge less, I'll be able to get more clients. The reality is it only takes a couple clients a month if you're charging higher ticket fees to actually make that business work and to make it sustainable. I think a lot of people underestimate what it takes to build a business and how much easier it is to build a business on high ticket than a lower end offer. So, like, think about Tesla, right? Tesla cars are all expensive. So in general, it's a high ticket brand, but they actually started with their most expensive model and they used that to fund all of their progressively less expensive models. So that's really ideally what we want to do in a coaching business. And that's why we want to focus on selling surgery, not prevention, because the heart surgeon, the specialist heart surgeon, is always going to charge more than the general practitioner that you put off going to for like 12 months, right? Any questions at this point on those two?
This is amazing. I love it. Go on. Like, what are the, I can't wait. What are the other three laws?
All right, cool. So we talked about live the result. That's the law of congruence, right? We talked about sell surgery, not prevention. That's what we want to focus on with our offers when we're putting together a coaching offer. The third is to leverage your archetype. Okay, what I call your coaching archetype. Most people, when they realize that, when they realize they need clients to run a coaching business, they realize, well, there's really two ways I could do it. I could either directly reach out to people one by one and try to chase clients, or I could have clients come to me. Obviously, we would prefer to have clients come to us, right? We'd prefer to become the go-to expert, the go-to authority, where everyone who has the problem we solve, they want us as their coach. Obviously, makes everything a lot easier. The challenge is when people go and try to figure out, well, what are the different ways I could attract clients? They get overwhelmed because there's quite a few ways. Like you could have a podcast like this that serves your niche, right? That we're going on now. You could have a blog where you have super relevant articles that people are always finding you and they search it out, right? You could do Facebook ads. You could build a webinar. You could be on Instagram. So there's a lot of different ways you can attract clients. And typically when people invest in a program for themselves and they invest in a mentor to help them build their coaching business, that mentor teaches their way of attracting clients. So for example, they'll be like, what works for me is a funnel with a Facebook ad to a webinar to, you know, a phone call, right? And that's their thing. And there's a place for that. But what you have to watch out for is if that strategy doesn't fit what I call your coaching archetype, you won't actually succeed with it and you won't actually be consistent with it, right? If you hate that way of attracting clients, it's not very sustainable. It's the same way as me saying, all right, the best way to lose weight is you run 5 miles a day and you eat vegan. Like that might work, right? But if I don't want to be vegan and if I hate running or have bad knees, that won't work for me, right? So on paper, it's great. And maybe for that guru, it works, but it won't work for me. Absolutely. So after working with coaching clients to build their businesses, I started seeing that they really fell into three categories of what they were best at when it came to marketing. And it clicked into place for me when I was reading Outliers by Malcolm, it's called The Tipping Point by Malcolm Gladwell. That's his other book. And he talks about three different types of people that help ideas spread. And when we're thinking about marketing, it's really what is making an idea spread. So he says there's mavens, there's connectors, and there's salespeople. So I've used this concept and adapted it to getting coaching clients. So we can kind of go through each of those. I have a quiz that we can link people to as well, where they can figure out what their archetype is. But law number three is to leverage your archetype. So once you know what your archetype is, you can just say, all of these strategies aren't relevant to me anymore. And I'm just going to focus on these one or two things that I can become great at, that I'll love to do each day, that'll feel natural, feel effortless as a way for me to attract clients.
This is so great because this solves like this problem that all new coaches have, right? This overwhelm that you have at the beginning and everyone tells you something different. And I was stuck in this for a long time myself. I was trying to convince myself I need to be on Instagram. I think Instagram is the classic example where everyone thinks they need to be on that platform as a coach, but Instagram comes with a specific set of kind of challenges or requirements if you want to be successful at it. You know, most specifically, you need to be on there every single day on stories. It's not something you can, you know, automate very well. And that was just not something that ever fit into, yeah, like you said, like my archetype. So I'm going to, right after we head off this podcast, I'm going to check out your quiz and find out more because I love that concept. Thanks so much for sharing that.
Yeah. Yeah. So gregfaxon.com/quiz. It's 5 questions, takes like 2 minutes, and it shares with you which one you are. So we can dive into them. If you think it'd be helpful for people, I can give you an overview now of the archetypes.
No, I think people can. I'm sure you have like a little description for each type on your website or once they do the quiz.
We do. Yeah, we do. So I'm happy to shelf that. They can do it on their own time.
Definitely. Let's hear, because there's some more things that we want to get into in today's conversation. Yeah. So let's quickly go through maybe law number 4 and 5, and then sure. We'll have some other exciting topics.
Cool. So we'll give you a real quick overview. Law number 4 is to focus on your pipeline. And by pipeline, I mean like your sales pipeline. It's one thing to have attention from people who could be great clients. It's quite another thing to actually have them on your calendar and enroll them into your program. And so not enough people focus on that gap between getting attention and converting it into clients. So obviously you need a way to have those enrollment conversations. You need to have a way to capture their information so you can actually follow up with them so they don't read one article and then they never see you again. So that conversion piece, very important. And then the final law is to get your clients what they want. Help your clients accomplish what they want. And if you're doing all of the other things, but you're not doing this one, then obviously your business is going to be a house of cards. It's not going to be sustainable. You're not going to get those case studies that you can then turn around and use to get more clients. You're not going to get referrals. And ultimately, you're not doing your job as a coach. What most people get wrong is that they don't always really realize what their clients want, So we have a system with our intake forms and the things that we do to keep clients on track that we help people with as well. But that's super important. I mean, that goes to the heart of the service itself. And sometimes people assume, well, I went through a coach certification, I know how to be a good coach. But that's a little bit different from creating a client experience that's going to delight people and that's going to have them spread the word.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. Well, that was amazing. Thank you so much, Greg. The 5 laws of high ticket coaching. Awesome. Definitely learned some new things here as well. Great. So I'd like to pivot our conversation a little bit as I've read your email newsletters lately, and I've noticed that you have very strong opinions on our current pandemic and especially what that means for coaches. Because, you know, a lot of people right now, they're playing it safe. They're saying, you know, not take any risks. It's a bad time to sell. But you're actually saying the opposite. You say now is the time to be bold as a coach, brave, and it's a fantastic opportunity to actually grow your business. So I'd love to talk a little bit more about that. Like, how do you see the current situation right now, especially for coaches and also especially for coaches that are just starting out?
If you're just starting out and you're listening to this now, you have to move right now, right away, because very soon we're going to probably have a lot of new coaches enter the market. So it hasn't happened quite yet, but now is definitely the time to build that traction. Because the further along you are in your coaching business, the more expertise you've built up, the more of an audience you've built up, the better position you're going to be in when a lot of other coaches enter the market. And if that scares you away, like, oh, maybe now is a bad time if the market's about to get crowded, like, then you probably you're not cut out for this, and actually don't just stop or just put it on hold. But for those who are listening who are serious, now is the time to double down. Here's why. Number one, there's more attention being paid to content than ever before. We're all just like sitting at home, you know? So people are much more willing to consume the content that drives our marketing as coaches, that generates awareness. Okay, the cost of attention has gone down. Second thing is that when people have problems in their life or in their business or their relationships or their health, those problems are accelerated by uncertainty. They're accelerated by a pandemic like this. So if I had a bad relationship before the pandemic, I need a divorce right now, right? If I had bad health before the pandemic, now I'm like locked in my house with food, right? If I had a bad business before the pandemic, those problems are going to be revealed now, okay? And so the problems we can solve as coaches, the transformations we want to help people through, those are even more urgent. It's the difference between selling surgery when someone, you know, their wrist is starting to hurt a little bit and getting them to come in when it's like a 10 out of 10 on the pain scale. And so that's important to realize as well in terms of where your market is. And the final thing is that people are, this is probably the least important, but people are spending less on superfluous things. And so some people say like, well, isn't that people are going to spend less on coaching because they're tightening their budget up. But this goes back to, is your offer surgery or prevention? People are cutting their prevention costs. Like, they're probably not buying like those little multivitamins that they were taking before. They're like, oh, maybe we'll cancel this one like subscription to a streaming service or whatever it is. But for the things that solve real issues, there's actually more of a budget for those. People are more likely to spend. And so this kind of again shows the importance of positioning right now. But I, as a business owner, there's really no such thing as just maintain the status quo. Like, you're either going to be advancing in your business or your business is going to be crumbling. And like, I know that's maybe like a little bit fear-based. And if that makes you anxious, then that's like honestly okay. Like, you can use that to fuel you a little bit. I think that one of the big things we see happening is that people are uncomfortable to sell because they don't want to take advantage of people. And I can really appreciate that perspective. And there are some people in our industry who are taking advantage of the situation or who are teaching coaches to take advantage, whether that's manipulation, that's playing on certain emotions that are happening and sort of twisting the knife in that way. That's one extreme, but I don't recommend you do that. The other extreme is taking what was already a fear of sales, already an imposter syndrome, and now using this pandemic as an excuse to not put yourself out there because to you it feels like it would be out of integrity. And if that's you, then I think you have to really look in the mirror and say, is it true that, like, if I really believe in my offer and know it helps people, is it true that putting that in front of people is taking advantage of them? Or is it possible that I'm just using this as an excuse to hide? And if it's the latter, then this is a great opportunity for you to fix that, to address those insecurities, or to just do it anyway. Because the reality is, as business owners and as coaches who want to be solving problems, there's really not a time where you can just say, I'm just going to kind of turtle up and wait till this thing's over. Because by the time it's over, you're just not going to have a business anymore. And what about all the people who needed your help in between that time that can't have it anymore?
Yeah. So it's almost like you're doing actually your audience a disservice by not putting your offers out there, not putting yourself, you know, out there, and not the other way around. So that's
Yeah. I mean, like if the grocery store down the street was like, we don't want to sell food. I know people are tight on money. So I don't want to take advantage of people. It's like, I need to eat. I need the food. So I don't want you to close.
Yeah. That's such a, I love that, because I think that, you know, analogy really helps people reframe that situation and their fear and, you know, kind of like this feeling of being out of integrity here. So that's amazing. So what right now, so you mentioned, okay, the pandemic is shedding some light on, you know, some areas where people really need surgery right now. So what are some niches that you're seeing that are doing specifically well right now?
Good question. So there's three main categories, three main channels when we're thinking about niches, right? There's health and fitness. There's relationships, which includes marriage, parenting, dating, all of that. And then there's business or career money, which includes like leadership, career, again, finances, all of that. So health, relationships, and money. Those are really the three main categories. They're still not niches, because if you just say, well, I'm just a career coach, you're still way broad there. I help everyone who has a career. It's like, okay. And then people wonder, I have one of my colleagues, Tad Hargrave, was a guest on one of our coaching calls. And he was like, you know, a lot of people will say like, where do I find clients? And it's like, well, who do you serve? Who can you help? And they're like, well, really my modality can help everyone. Well, it's like, I guess just anywhere then. You can find clients everywhere because they're everyone, right? So if you haven't defined your market, it's going to be hard to do any marketing. Those are the three main categories. So then we have to look within those categories. If people type in 21 proven and profitable niches, Greg Faxon, or some combination of that, it'll come up. I have an article where I list 21 of those. And all of those are still, all of them, they are still viable. Some of them are going to be harder than others. What I would say is, if your offer can help people make money directly or indirectly, that's always going to stand the test of time. That's not to say you can't, that's not to say every offer has to be financial. But for example, I mentioned we have a fitness coaching business. One of the benefits, because we work with entrepreneurs primarily, is those people have increased energy. They're able to be on camera more. They run their business more effectively to make more money. So that may not be their primary motivation for coming in. They may want to feel good about themselves. But if we can show them how that's translating into their business and financial world, that's helpful. That's an ROI, a return on investment, that's easier for people to calculate. So I would say, regardless of whatever niche you're in, right now, where there's economic uncertainty, if you can somehow tie your offer to a financial upside, you'll probably be more likely to succeed with that. So that's number one. Other things that I would say, I think that it's less about the niche than it is about the level of pain, like the level, like how much is it surgery versus prevention? Like we have clients in career right now. We have clients in like the performance niche, the business niche, all of them are getting clients and doing well, but that's a lot about how we crafted their offer and how we positioned their offer. So things that I would say aren't going to do well or anything that feels like hobby-based, like not that important. Like I wouldn't be a coach who helps people build a journaling habit, you know? And that could be one thing that you do in pursuit of a larger goal. But like, if you're going to be a generalist life coach right now, that's really like a peacetime expense. Meaning like, that's not something that someone's going to invest in unless it's tied to some sort of specific problem. If you're going to be in career coaching, help people find meaningful work, but also emphasize that you're going to help them get paid well for it. So I think it's just being aware of the current climate and saying like, does this feel like a peacetime expense or a wartime expense, and planning accordingly. It's hard for me to say like, well, the weight loss niche is doing great, but you know, the career coaching niche isn't doing well. I haven't really seen that. I think offers that work well in good markets work well or better in bad markets. Offers that don't really work that well in good markets like totally flunk in bad markets. So the pandemic hasn't really created any change for coaching businesses in terms of what's relevant. It's only revealed the niches and the offers that were weak to begin with.
That's such a great opinion you have on that. And it kind of comes back to what you said, like the problems you had before the pandemic, they're kind of really being revealed now. So that is the same with bad niches or, you know, like things that are not working in your business. It's just going to be revealed right now. It doesn't not mean that it's because of the pandemic. It has always been there. You just didn't notice it.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, I have a few quick fire questions to end our conversations, but if there's anything else you want our audience to know about this pandemic, go ahead and share it right now.
I'll just reinforce that you're probably not doing a lot else right now. So now is probably a good time to just focus on your business. You know, it's like my wife and I, this time last year, like going to the summer, we were enjoying downtown Burlington. We live in Vermont. We were like getting drinks and eat, you know, going to nice restaurants. Like that's not really going to happen. So you may as well look back on this time and be like, this was a season where I really focused on my business. I really focused on the career and work side of my life. And I put in the time and I fixed the things that needed to be fixed so that I could come out on the other side of it in a great position. And the coaches that put the work in now and are able to succeed now, when we get that wave coming back, just in terms of the economy in general, they're already going to be leading the pack. So they're set up to be that leader in their space. And you have to start planting seeds now in order to harvest it. So that's what I would recommend.
That's so great. Thank you. Okay, let's start with our quick fire questions. So it's going to be just a few quick questions and just answer like in 3 to 5 sentences at maximum.
All right.
Good. Ready?
Yes.
What is your best advice for anyone who wants to become a coach?
Don't become a coach. I'll scare away all the people who aren't going to do it in the first place.
And in your opinion, what does it take to build a successful coaching business? What are the keys to success?
We've talked about the laws, but if I were to add on to that, I would say perseverance, just keep going until you figure out the way that works. And the other is just you actually having the ability to help people, not just coaching skills, but either in your own story, having gone through a significant transformation, or being able to support others in doing so.
How did you learn how to coach?
Mostly through mentors, getting coached by others.
And what's your best advice for selling your services as a coach?
Don't coach yourself out of the sale and go in deep to solving a specific issue they have on the call. Focus on where they are, how much that sucks, where they want to go, how great that will be, and then help them see how working with you will fill in that gap.
And what's your best advice for becoming a really great coach who consistently gets their clients results?
Live the result and know your archetype. One of the things we didn't talk about is your archetype isn't just how you market, but it's also based on building a program that's going to suit your strengths. Course versus group versus live event, stuff like that.
And one last thing, what's your best advice for organizing your coaching business and working with clients?
Start off one-to-one, then go one-to-few, small group, then go one-to-many in a course. Don't spend all your time trying to build a course before you've helped people through that transition.
That's such a great point. Like it's what I preach a lot as well with my clients. Great. Where can people find you online? So we'll definitely link your quiz below and your 21 niches article. Where else can people find you?
GregFaxon.com is the hub for everything. So we got lots of free resources, free trainings, and basically anything that you need, you can find there.
All right. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, Liz.
All right. Anything else you want to share before we end our interview?
No, all set.
Awesome. And if you like this episode and want to stay up to date with new releases, I'd love if you subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you're listening to this. And if you're ready to take the next step and start your own coaching business, head to confidentcoachclub.com to take our free 5-day email course that will teach you the key steps to launch your coaching career. We'll be right back.